subject for April is the mysteries of the mind. And today's topic is memory of past lives. Now we come together to look at these ideas as a group of independent thinkers. We are told no one can give us this knowledge. It is within, but we have to seek it out. So we do that by coming together as an association. It's free, it's open to the public. We share all kinds of ideas, race, creed, sex, religion, none of that is important. What's important is the ideas we hold. So we share those with one another. The main point being that great nature and everything in the universe is our brother, is our sister. We are all one. And in studying that idea, it opens up some marvelous channels for us to that deeply held knowledge, and you'll hear about that today. It is said that the lodge, the workers, in whatever way they see fit, who are working to help humanity, are called theosophists. So there's nothing to sign, nothing to sign up for. There is a card that says, seeking to do this, I'd like to be recorded as a theosophical student. And the last line is, the true theosophist belongs to no cult or sect, but belongs in each and all, because no matter what the label, there is truth to be found for us to seek out. And the declaration, if it's your first time, on the back of this little pamphlet with our schedule is magnificent. It's a three-paragraph expression of who and what we are. So if you have the opportunity, it's on the book table and right behind the usher. So this morning we have all different kinds of, you'll see different students up here. Everyone is a student volunteering, including putting a dollar, if you have it, in the little box on top of the bookcase will help to keep the heat on. Or if you can do more, if you wish to participate, talk to the person at the book table. But we're completely a voluntary association, and everything that is contributed stays here. We like to keep the building open to the public. So the setup for today is called a forum. There will be a student who will come up, give us a talk on the memory of past lives, and then we'll have plenty of time for questions and discussion.
Let's assume, for the sake of this forum, that your name is either Anne, or if you're a male, it's Adam. You live the typical, if there is such a thing, American life. You go to work, you come home tired, do what you need to do at home, and at the end of the night, you fall into bed, exhausted most of the time. Now, having done this for weeks, months, years on end, let me ask you a question. What were you doing on October 10th, 1988? What about May the 2nd, 1975? Yeah, I know, try as you can, it's tough to remember something that you did yesterday, let alone so far back in history. The topic suggests, or basically asks, why can't we remember past lives? The first thing I'd like to point out is that you, Em, and you, Adam, aren't doing such a great job of remembering a few odd days with this life you're presently in. You have been an or Adam since your birth. You have had the same body since your birth. You've had the same brain since your birth. Sounds like you have all the tools you need to be the memory master of your life, day to day, month to month, and year to year. Could be there's a reason you can't recall the happenings of a particular day, such as in October of 88 or May of 1975. I wonder why there isn't a memory recall. We know you were there. You were recording into your memory the entire day, and you apparently have all the working tools you need. So why can't you remember? Let's take a look at some of the questions from a theosophical point of view. Your attendance here this morning indicates that you obviously have an interest in reincarnation and past lives. You are probably full of questions like, where did I live before? Who was I? Was I rich or was I poor? Was I good? Was I evil? How many lives have I really lived? These are just a few of the questions that might immediately come across your mind. But there are hundreds more waiting in the wings. But the real question underlying all of these questions is, why can't I remember anything of the past lives? All of these questions must inevitably lead us to the somewhat intricate subject of memory. But when you think of memory, know this. It's just a generic name for the innate power within us. Within us, thinking beings, of reproducing past impressions. And how is this done? By an association of ideas suggested by objective things or by some action on our five external senses. For example, a special word in a poem, a scent from a bouquet, a lyric from a song, that beautiful music you hear, or maybe a glimpse of a look-alike person. Memory is a faculty depending entirely on the normal functioning of our physical brain. Taking a closer look, there are three accepted forms of memory: remembrance, recollection, and reminiscence. And there are indeed many differences between them. In remembrance, we get the idea, but not all the particulars that have brought about some of the feelings, events, or circumstances of the past. In recollection, we can collect back from one point all the other points connected with it. But there is a third function of the memory known as reminiscence, which most importantly is not at all dependent upon the physical brain. It is brought into function oftentimes not by any present object or occurrence arousing attention in that direction, but springs directly from the soul itself. It comes from something behind the brain serving merely as a filter or interceptor or translator of impressions. It is a direct perception of what was otherwise known as soul wisdom. Very few events are impressed upon us or are immediately translatable through the brain by way of remembrance. Even if we so desired and tried until our brain hurt, we could never make a complete history of all those impressions through the faculty of recollection either. Yet there is the inherent faculty of recalling, recollecting, and reassembling in such a way as to have a consecutive or synthetic grasp of all those impressions through reminiscence. That faculty of memory, which applies to the soul, a fascinating innate quality of the soul. This type of memory is called true memory. And it is indeed possible for every living being to achieve. On the physical plane, the action of true memory is seen in all those stages through which the human goes from conception to birth. In every act of our existence, we are exhibiting true memory, whether we realize it or not. The memory of walking is with us now. The memory of talking is with us now. We may not remember how nor when we learned to talk or to walk, but we have present with us the knowing of how to walk and talk. True memory is just that, the possession of the knowledge of the past, not only on the physical plane, however. Dreams attest that we are alive and active on inner planes, for in them we think, we speak, we smell, we taste, we hear, we move as individuals, and never have any question as to our identity, even though the personality presented should be that of some past incarnation. The dreaming state is very close to the point of waking, the intermediate state between waking and sleep, so that we are able to impress the brain cells with what was occurred before waking and remember. But beyond the dreaming stage, which is a short stage of sleep, there is a vast extent of human thought and action. We go in and in until we are close to the source of our own being, where the thinker is at work, where he knows all that he has been through, all his past incarnations, where he sees and knows himself as he is. The memory of all the experiences through which he has been as an individual being is there in one consecutive whole. True memory is the paradise which all human beings should strive to regain. To recover that whole memory, to make that great knowledge of the past usable, here and now, in the brain and in the body, is the true work of salvation. The barrier for every Ann and Adam is not in the memory, but in the false ideas of life according to which they act. However much the soul remembers, if we are using the brain contrary to the nature of the soul, the brain will not and cannot translate its impressions. The thinker must transfer the memory of the soul to the brain, and he can do so only by thinking and acting along right lines during every active waking consciousness until the brain responds to those ideas and learns to transmit what occurs while the body is inoperative. Then the true memory of the past that is in the soul will become our knowledge in the brain. We must not forget, however, that a time will eventually come when each of us will be able clearly to recollect all the events of our past lives. The register of everything that has ever happened to an individual is imprinted imperishably upon the deathless, divine side of this nature. But we have not yet developed the the spiritual faculties that would enable us to read this mystic record. Nor shall we develop them so long as we constantly identify ourselves only with the life of the brain and the personality. For now, self-interest shuts us in. Passions hold us in selfish blindness. Prejudice weaves its dense web over intuition and creative power. And so we languish in our narrow prisons of personalities, the Adam and the Eve, if you will. Only occasionally, when the sunshine of divine love or the spirit of self-sacrifice inspires us, do we catch a gleam of the dawn without our prison walls. Man must use his spiritual will to realize his essential godhood and break through the bonds of selfishness and ignorance into the reality lying just beyond the threshold of his everyday consciousness. And finally, to refresh your memory, the subject for today is memory of past lives.
Wonderful ideas and surprising ideas sometimes, because we often believe whatever we can remember is all there is. But as was said, what were we doing October 25th, 1988? Perhaps a child was graduating, so that date is fixed in our mind to the event, and we recollect or recollect all the events of that day. But if it was a typical day, there's no reason to remember it. So remembering past lives, most people say, I don't think I want to know what I was or what I did, because if they were before the life we currently have, we know we had to do less than what we're doing now, have less of an understanding. So your questions and thoughts are welcomed, yes?
In regards to what was just said about remembering past lives, so we may not, just like we may not know what we were doing on, you know,
pick a date
of this year, and we may not be able to remember past lives, but don't we bring forward, though, some of those impressions? I mean, we hear all the time about people with these extraordinary abilities, and it's like the family goes, where did this come from? Well, aren't those memories of past lives being brought forward then?
That is the question. Are those seemingly natural-born gifts that don't run in a family line, shall we say, memory of past lives? It's again an interesting way of looking at it, because we recently had a class on after death states, and we know there's a point at which we stand before the new life and see, as was beautifully described, everything that went before. We know it's just, but we are pulled back and magnetically attracted to that which we gave a lot of attention to in a previous life. So let's say Mozart had, I couldn't say how many lives, where he was attracted to the piano forte of his time. And there came a lifetime where it blossomed. And whether or not there was that line in the family, and there happened to be, yes, he brought back the essence of that true memory through the new vehicle. Now, if the new vehicle were not appropriate to bring that out, it wouldn't show up until perhaps a karmic lesson was learned. But those skandhas are evidence, actually, that we've lived before. Skandhas are tendencies that we create. Yes.
If we want to learn something, accomplish something, we know we have to put the effort forward. Practice and practice, and we learn in accordance to our ability, natural or otherwise, and our willingness to make the effort. Well, if that's how we learn, if we're born with something, it follows logically we did that effort in a previous life.
Right.
The thing that Theosophy reminds us is that we are full of past wisdom and knowledge that is blocked because of the way we're using our brain and all of our powers in a mostly selfish, personal way. So it's still there, but we can't touch it always.
Absolutely. Mr. Crosby tells us the highest as well as the lowest are rays from and one with the divine absolute principle. Each is the seer, the perceiver, who stands in the center of his own universe, through which alone we may know all that may be known of the highest. So it is within us, but we're busy doing other things, or as was said, perhaps there's something that blocks it for a time. It doesn't have to be for a lifetime until we recognize that karmic duty and are able to work it through, then whatever's waiting will appear, and it may be just as was described. Yes.
The idea that at certain times we meet people who we are attracted to, and sometimes we meet people who we are repulsed by, without knowing them. First time we've ever seen them, we want to go out for a cup of coffee and make this person a friend. There's some rapport between us that we really feel is ongoing, you know, a really good person. Is that a form of past memory?
Absolutely. The question being, when we reincarnate into this life, there are those we're drawn to and those we are not drawn to. Let's just say that. But Theosophy tells us we reincarnate with our family members and those we love and are close to, because probably we haven't finished what we need to work through with them. And eventually it'll be a new and different group of souls that we reincarnate with. But it is absolutely evidence that we knew them before. Now, the trick is, if we are for some reason can't stand them, repulsed by them, here's an opportunity. And we tried this once with a teacher friend. We just couldn't stand to look at the person, and there was no reason why. We kept troubled over this until we said, we're going to treat them like we treat everyone else. And over time and practicing that, as was said, really working on it, I came to like the person. If I see him on the street, we have a hug and a hello. So working in harmony with that which is divine, which may be tough for our nature at the time, we get that benefit from the divine and perhaps are able to change a situation. Yes, in the back?
And it could be maybe that whatever it is about that individual that bothers us that much could be something in our own nature that we're not aware of.
Yes.
And here's a mirror showing us, here's something to look at within.
Yes, we are all mirrors for one another. We are all teachers and we are all students. And it's a matter of knowing this is not all I can be. I can be much more than this and attention to those problems that come up. What is there in this for me to learn? And it may change your nature dramatically. Was your hand up, sir?
No.
No? Okay.
There's a phenomenon, it's rare, but there are individuals who can remember everything they ever did and said and happened in their entire lives. They have total recall. And we're wondering, you know, is that really a gift or not? And on top of that, is that maybe something that's developing as the sixth root race, the sixth sub-race of the fifth root race, is developing here in the Americas? That could be a latent power that we have. Because if we remember everything, we hope we're less likely to make the same mistakes over and over again.
Sure. Now, is the question remembering everything from a certain age? I mean, not remembering being born, obviously, right? Or
there are some people who claim they can remember being born, but
right.
I don't know about that.
Right.
We've seen a couple of shows. They have about six or seven people gathered,
mm-hmm.
and they throw out a date, and then they can remember. They all instantly remember what was going on in the news.
The day of the week.
Everything. They remember everything.
Yeah.
So it's just.
Well, we have to say, we're not sure, but we'll give a stab at this. Is it a gift? Was your first question, or perhaps not? We guess it would depend on what they do with it. If they're on a show bragging about it or even just exhibiting it, they're going the wrong way. Whatever they have learned through all those memories can make them shine brighter and be of more help to humanity if they so choose. So that's the first part, and we'll get help. Do you want to answer that part?
Well, the few shows that I have seen about this unusual faculty, they were not bragging. They were there as part of a scientific statement about it. Now, the fact is that every one of us has that, and it can be proven in brain surgery as they touch various electrodes to various spots in the brain. The individual says, "Oh, it's my sixth birthday, and I'm opening my presents." So it's all there in our brain. But the point is, what good is all of that to any one of us? Even in memory of past lives, we're not supposed to be after who was I, where was I, but what did I learn? What did I accomplish? So it isn't a gift, as you said. It is a peculiarity and can be more of an interference.
Thank you. Yes.
And yet, there is advice in different readings in the philosophy that at the end of the day, it's advisable to sit in concentration and in meditation that's contemplative and to make the attempt to recall all the aspects of that particular day of consciousness, and not only just the bare recall, the bare memory, but what was just said, the synthesis of what was the best, where did the aspiration of altruism and brotherhood, where was that reflected, when was it not reflected? So all that analysis and synthesis is the recommended overlay. And that practice probably sets up karmic skandhas, if you will, future applications.
Absolutely. And we're told every plane of consciousness has a memory of its own. So we think, well, we're sleeping. How could we be conscious? Well, we're told we go into a dream state and a deep sleep, and then as was mentioned in the talk, we draw near that place where the true memory resides. And coming back out, the difficulty is it's languaged in a dream or symbolized in a dream, and we wake up and think, what was that? Or it's immediately gone. So perhaps the exercise at night would help us with remembering in the morning. And it's our inner self telling our outer self something we need to hear, if that makes sense. Yes, sir.
This instinct in animals and intuition in man, are those forms of remembrances?
Well, we can say yes for man. We know if you watch a dog or a cat sleep, their legs are going and you figure they're chasing a rabbit or birds or whatever is appropriate for that kingdom. I don't know if that's instinct in the dream. It would seem to be, but we'll ask for some ideas on that as well. No? Yes?
To go back for a moment to the point that was just made about the looking at the day, at the evening, looking at the whole of the past day that you've just lived. It does a couple of things. It shortens the after-death states because you're already reviewing and assimilating and making judgments about behavior. Mm-hmm. And it makes you every day a little more aware of yourself in the sense of what I say and what I do. It puts like a sensor with you.
Perceive.
That you realize the responsibility for what you are saying and doing.
It is the perceiver. It's just we're not awake to that yet. We're not consciously perceiving. We're just going through our day. And one word you mentioned is very important, judgment. These are the reasons why you can't look at someone or their behavior and make a judgment about them. You have no idea what they're going through, as they have no idea what you're going through. And if they have somehow come into your life, there's a duty there. Maybe there's something they have to give you or something you have to give them in the way of spiritual knowledge. So look at each one as a teacher or a student and be ready to help when necessary. Yes?
We heard a phrase in these rooms, the many in the one in the many. And by the way,
the one in the many in the one. For those of you whose first or second time it is here, you may not have heard yet in the classes the sevenfold nature of the universe and the sevenfold nature of man. In man, there are three higher faculties. Atma, which is a direct ray from that divinity, that oneness. Buddhi, which is the spiritual soul, which is where the true memories are kept lifetime to lifetime. And manas, the Sanskrit word for mind. Now, that's not the brain, it's something else. The four lower, and we say lower because they pertain to the physical man, are kama, which are our desires. We have plenty of those. Prana, which is the life energy, we're constantly sort of battling with until, as was said, we fall into bed and off we go to dreamland. The astral body, which is the outline for the lowest, which is the physical body. But all of those and their sisters and partners in the universe all come down to, are energized by, and survive because of the divine oneness. There is a spark of it in every one of us, in every kingdom of nature, in every piece of the universe we can look at and those we can't up in the sky. And that unity becomes our duty. If we are all from the same source, then there is no need for separateness. We are acting and we speak in certain ways, but in this state where we're trying to reach those truths that are stored within us, the things we've already learned, It is said the path varies with the pilgrim, but it's the same path to reach that oneness, embody it in our everyday language and experience, and we're told, just do the best you can. That's pretty cool. Yes.
We just wanted to go back to the question regarding intuition and instinct.
Mm-hmm.
Sitting here thinking about that. And intuition, well, we know the seat of intuition is Bodhi, which is the storehouse of memory. So we would just kind of assume that, you know, intuition could be associated with the memory of past lives. But instinct in the lower kingdoms, on the other hand, we're told that the lower kingdoms, each specific group is kind of working off a single, you know, like impression, you know, like all dogs will react the same. You see, you know, pigeons, you know, hundreds of them, and they all turn at the same time. So we don't know that would be bringing forth any kind of past life memories as much as maybe, since it's a group impression, that it would be for that particular lifetime. We're not 100% sure, but we don't think it's a past life idea.
We don't think so either. In the instinct, in the animal kingdom, it is just that, the instinct. Every dog walks the same way, but does not behave the same way, according to how we have impressed it. So we are interfering in a sense with its evolution, although we're giving it love and good food and whatever it might be. The instinct we understood to be in sleep, the example given of the movement, and same with the human, the rapid eye movement lets the scientists know they're dreaming. So that's all we can come up with. Your thoughts?
Well, frequently when the fundamental principles are presented in class, we're reminded that the second fundamental proposition has to do with cycles or periodicity or cause and effect. And what is said in that premise is that in the human kingdom, where you have a self conscious entity capable of metacognition and higher spiritual faculties, there you have karma and reincarnation. Not so in the lower kingdoms. The potentiality is not there.
Right. But instinct is the nature of that kingdom, correct? Yes, thank you.
Another way of expressing it is instinct is direct perception of that consciousness. There is consciousness in even in the atom, in all of the lower kingdoms, but it's direct perception of their role intuition is also direct perception, but it's the self-consciousness looking at the past and the future. So it's both.
Okay. Thank you. You had your hand up before.
We were just pondering. We've seen a lot of nature shows, and a lot of times that, yes, animals have instincts, but they also learn from their mothers. So there's a learning process too, there, within limits, of course.
Right.
But it's, could we say it's all strictly instinct? I mean, it's apparently there's, you know, they need to be taught how to hunt and things like
sure.
that.
Well, we know there's communication within the species. And yes, there are things to learn, but we perceive that more as patterning, if that makes sense. An elder elephant does this, so the younger elephant struggles to keep up. The dolphin jumps and spins, so the next generation is learning how to spin that body. So we perceive it more as, we personally perceive it more as patterning than learning, because there is no self-conscious mind, to use the word learn, if that makes sense. Yes?
You heard the term,
I'm sorry.
Love ye one another as I have loved thee.
Mm-hmm.
Thou art master of all that thou surveyest. Yet when we look around, we see differences. Our understanding in these rooms, we're taught that universal brotherhood is a fact in nature. So when you refer to such things as spirit, soul, and mind, what is spirit in this particular discussion?
Spirit is the highest connection to the divine. And there is a reflection of it even in the lower kingdoms. It may not be able to be accessed until we reach the human stage, but it is in a grain of sand as it is in the highest master. And we had a reading for the end which would fit well here, if you'll forgive us. Again, Mr. Crosby. Only when we gain the perception that we are the eternal spirit, that death never touches us at all, that we may have a conscious life in spirit, not in matter, only when we begin to think and act from that basis can true memory come through to the brain. Only then can we know for ourselves, have nothing to ask of anyone, but have everything to give to every other one. That true memory is possible for every living being. And we know that the masters, the elder brothers, are the perfection of that reading and are always with us and always helping us. So we have to just reach up and do the work as best we can, and over lifetimes and lifetimes, we will become perfected. There was a hand here before you. Yes.
My hand was up because of the earlier statement about learning and changed behaviors in the animal kingdom, and it's become quite a fascination in public media and social media, to have film clips of one species of animal taking care of another. And it usually is within the companion animal, the so-called civilized
Yes.
You mentioned about really gaining the memory of the past. We would think you have to move very far ahead in just in the ability to feel compassion, because Theosophy teaches we've been on this earth acting, choosing, thinking for 18 million years. We have not been nice and good all of those 18 million years. So if we're going to gain this memory, we have to work on our compassion, because it's ourselves we have to look at, and the stupid and maybe cruel and horrible things we've done.
And yet we have the ability, if we put it forth, to do the complete opposite of that and to work in harmony with the laws of nature and of the divine. And we know making our New Year's resolution this time of year gives us a tremendous boost to do better. And if we understand those tides of nature and man, it comes slowly, but it should be recognized. There might be a moment when we see another in need and we don't think about it, we just help. And afterwards we feel terrific because we're working in the right direction. So you can get hooked on that. There are, Lord knows how many volunteer associations in the city, but every day we pass homeless people. And a woman asked me the other day, just for a cup of coffee. Of course, I'd rather do that and keep her warm than give her, you know, what I could monetarily. So the opportunities are there, and it's our perception of what the situation is sometimes that needs to change. Yes.
As we remember and recall to our remembrance, the Constitution of the United States of America, first its Declaration, and the preamble, and this use of the term oneness, unity, and right away we see that we've always, society, always trying to establish oneness, all for one and one for all, regardless of race, creed, sex, etc. What prevents us from doing that, we think, is we don't have some fundamental ideas to begin with. And as was mentioned, those fundamental principles, the ideas that we study, give us an insight what do we mean by unity, even though we look different and everything else?
We wouldn't have time to do the fundamentals right now, but on Wednesday, every other Wednesday evening, they are presented by a student who has studied them. But we are one, we have the pursuit of happiness. We were always perplexed how that got in there and what it meant. It doesn't say my happiness, it says the pursuit of happiness. And happiness comes when we help our brothers and sisters. So it proves the prior statement that we are all one. So, you know, to say that we don't have these ideas, we do. They're expressed differently in many, many religions. As ye sow, so shall ye reap. Every religion has, as you treat another, so you shall be treated. And I'm not saying the words right, but we understand that. And it's a matter of, if we are the perceiver, which we are, internally, externally, completely in our being, but mostly in our compassionate heart light, then it's our responsibility to seek out these ideas. Look at all the people sitting here today. To seek out these ideas and put them into action, expecting nothing. People have opened the door and held it for someone. The other one went through. Well, they didn't even say thank you. What were you expecting? Just open the door for them. Forget about what you're getting back from that. Silly example, but it's often how we live. What's the quid pro quo? Nope. What's my duty? Yes.
So are you saying that the conditions in which we find our existence, our conditioned reality, and whether we're looking for a thank you or not, all of those things in a certain way reflect memories of past lives,
mm-hmm.
past habits, as well as current habits?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we are creating every moment past habits for our future incarnation. So every single moment that we are living this life, how we do it, how we color it, how we recognize the divine oneness will go into the fabric of a future lifetime. So we are the creators. We're also the destructors of the wrong ideas and the recreators of the right ideas. And truth can be found everywhere. We need to, those rose-colored glasses need to come off, and we need to look critically at our lives and what we've been doing and how we can do it better.
Their higher self down to the lower self, you know.
Other way around,
like to balance it.
Bring the lower up. Bring the lower up.
Bring the lower up. But actually, when you bring the lower self up, and say, for instance, if you're trying to accomplish something, or if you had a vision, you're trying to walk in your goals and your vision, and it seems like everything around you is going against you, instead of pulling for you, and you might pick up resentment within yourself. So by bringing your lower self up, would it make the situation or the people around you forgive you and willing to help you according to you as an individual?
It's a very good question, and we will call on you in just 1 minute. It's a oneness that has 7 states of consciousness. The 3 higher, Atma, Buddhi, Manas, and the 4 terrestrial, let's say, or lower, that are all used by the man, the physical man. If we are really striving, if we find ourselves in a terrible situation, and we're really striving to change it around, we put down the resentment. We put down the difficulty. Just for a moment, try it. And imagine that one as someone you love. How would I treat them? It changes in a heartbeat. And you have lifted your mind to the higher within, and there's been a hand up.
Well, just that in order to ask a question and get an answer, we have to understand the basis of what we're saying. There is only one self. There
mm-hmm.
isn't the higher self and the lower self. It's or. It's the higher self or the lower self. And who's making that choice? I am, this thinker. And this thinker, every time I work from the personal and the selfish, transforming that lower.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what a great soul has done. They don't have a personal nature to even worry about because they have lifted it up into their own higher nature. So we have to remember, there aren't two.
Right.
There's just one. And every choice we make reflects on that.
Can help. Okay. We are almost finished. We did hear that the barrier to this true memory is the false ideas we hold, and we need to think and act along right lines during waking consciousness. That's what the Buddha said. If we look at his teachings, right thinking, right memory, right job, and there's a whole list of the right way to do these things that we take for granted sometimes. Well, this is the only job I could get. I don't have to do any better with it. No, you can. You absolutely can. And working in harmony with all of nature begins to open that channel within that one, which is each of us. Masters have perfected that. Their love and help is ever with us. We are never without a friend. So go out, do the best you can, and we are told, thou art Buddha. Thou art Buddha. Do the best you can. Meeting adjourned.